Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 6 months ago, Michael Brown was shot and killed in Ferguson, Missouri. One factor that may have fed into the tension surrounding that death: municipal courts, which are jailing residents, many poor, many black, for unpaid tickets and fines. Using those fines and the threat of what can look like debtor's prison as a big part of their revenue stream for their communities. Now those courts are in the spotlight. Lawsuits, talk of reform. And it's not just in Missouri. This hour on Point, American justice and the debtor's prison problem. People paying attention to this. In May 2013, Ronnie Tucker was taken to the Ferguson jail after failing to pay speeding tickets, failing to appear in court. Okay, failings. But last weekend, he spoke with NPR about what conditions were like in that jail.
So when I got caught, I had to sit in jail for like 14 or 15 days with no shower, no change of clothes, dirty cells. We've been treated like dogs.
Not just him. Tonya DeBerry was pulled over by a St. Louis County police officer over a year ago. She was handcuffed and arrested when the officer saw she had an arrest warrant for unpaid traffic tickets in Ferguson. She told NPR her arrest was unfair.
Just traffic tickets. No criminal act, nothing. Just traffic tickets. If you have the money, you will never go through that type of situation. If you don't have the money, it's jail, jail.
The big dynamic, it's not just in Missouri, it's not just around St. Louis. Here's Jared Thornburg. He was jailed for 10 days for being unable to pay a traffic fine in Jefferson County, Colorado. Last year, he told Fox 31 Denver that paying the fine was just too much of a hardship.
Being jobless, and there's no way I could just come up with $165. That's like asking to have $1,000 or more at that time.
Can be if you don't have much income. People are looking this and at this and wondering, well, what is the dynamic here? This was Republican state senator in Alabama, Cam Ward, talking with PBS NewsHour in December, saying he's concerned about the return of what can effectively be or look like debtors' prisons.
What's currently in existence is almost like the Wild West. There is no regulation. If you're going to create a system that, quote unquote, is a debtor's prison, all you're doing is inviting yourself to a federal lawsuit.
Joining me now from St. Louis is Brendan Roediger, professor of law at St. Louis University, one of the plaintiff attorneys in a class action lawsuits against authorities in Ferguson and nearby Jennings, Missouri, for jailing hundreds of residents for unpaid debts. Brendan Roediger, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Glad to be here.
And with us from New York is Alec Karakatsanis, co-founder of the national civil rights organization Equal Justice Under Law, one of the groups that brought lawsuits against Ferguson and Jennings, brought similar lawsuit against Montgomery, Alabama last year. The city agreed to reforms to its municipal court. Alec, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
We're going to go to Ferguson and Jennings and these nearby communities of St. Louis. Do we have a national problem here, Alec, or is this just something that's very localized?
We do have a national problem. I think what we're seeing is the rise of modern debtors' prisons. I think it's impossible to understand that phenomenon without understanding it in context. And I think what we've seen through some of NPR's reporting, there was a great series on NPR last year called Guilty and Charged. We've seen the rise of courts trying to fund municipalities through generating revenue off the backs of the very poor through traffic tickets. When you start to conceive of your court, and this is happening all over the country, when you start to conceive of your court as a mechanism for revenue generation rather than dispensing justice, we have a real problem. And the second, I think, component of this in the broader context is that this American moment that we're in, we have over 2.5 million human beings in cages on any given day in the United States, if you include immigrant detention centers. And this mass incarceration, which is unseen in modern recorded world history and certainly in the history of the United States, changes the way we think about human beings and human bodies. When you have to transfer that many people from their homes and families into cages, it changes the way you think about them. You have to develop processes to make it more efficient. So you stop providing them lawyers. You start putting them in jail for really, really minor things like Ms. DeBerry was talking about, traffic tickets. And you also lose any sense of what kind of a brutal thing it is to do to put a human being in a cage. And so what we've seen is traffic debtors all throughout St. Louis County, throughout Alabama, and throughout many, many other states being thrown in jail in these sort of mass assembly line court hearings. And then when they're in jail, we've lost any sense of what it's like. And so we in the St. Louis County cases, as our cases allege, we're putting them in cells that, with the walls caked in feces and blood and mucus, with no shower, no toothbrush for weeks and days, no medical care, no mental health care. These are the kinds of things that our society has started to do to people because, in my view, we've lost any sense of what a brutal thing caging another person is. And I think that is sort of the context within which all of this needs to be understood on the national level.
Brendan Rodiger, if you're facing it, you know it very well. If you're looking from the outside, I think some people can look on and say, look, we need public order. You break the law, you pay the fine. What's the problem?
Yeah, Tom, I mean, so there are over 400,000 outstanding warrants in St. Louis County. I refuse to believe that this is just the capital of irresponsibility. I think the system is designed to make it very easy to fall out of the bottom for one mistake to really change someone's life. I would agree with Alec. These prisons, in a lot of ways, are far worse than debtors' prisons were historically. Historically, debtors' prisons were places that allowed you to go to work, that allowed you to get out of debt. This is really just incarceration in terrible conditions, and when you leave, you still owe the debt.
Describe how this system works. I mean, I'm reading stories out of St. Louis just in this month. You've got a law that's supposed to cap the amount of a community's revenue that comes from the municipal courts, but here, one community, Calverton Park, reported has two-thirds of all city revenue from municipal court fines and fees. I would say that's pretty dependent on this. I'm looking at Ferguson itself, a population of just 21,000, has the highest number of arrest warrants in the state relative to its size, 1,500 warrants per 1,000 people. Now, Brendan, are people in residents of Ferguson more lawless than elsewhere, or are they under a different kind of law enforcement regime?
Well, certainly they're not more lawless. And the reality is that these municipalities, they prospectively budget for these increases. So they'll decide at the end of a year, we want to make $200,000 more off of traffic fines or $500,000 more off of traffic fines. And that sends a message to the police. It encourages low-level policing. So it changes the dynamics of community policing. It's absolutely controlled from the top.
It can look, Brendan, like farming fines out of these communities, and these tend to be, many of them, low-income communities where the consequences can be quite enormous. That few hundred dollars may be just an unreachable sum for somebody to pay, then they end up in jail, then they lose their job, then they lose their license, and you're in a cycle it's hard to get out of.
Absolutely. I mean, one mistake can change everything. But I would add that wealthier municipalities prey on poor people just as much as some of these poor communities. It's easier to hide that money. It may not show up as such a large percentage of annual revenue, but it absolutely occurs.
So what do you want out of this lawsuit, Brendan Rodiger, these two suits against Ferguson and Jennings?
So the lawsuits are about compensating our plaintiffs and those individuals who have been subject to these debtors' prisons, and also about getting the court to order that some of these things fundamentally change.
How would you change it?
Including the conditions.
Are you talking about abolishing the courts, abolishing the courts themselves, or reining in their enforcement of the law, or what?
Well, we haven't requested abolition in our lawsuits, and that wouldn't be appropriate in the lawsuits. I do believe that it's very difficult to imagine reforming this system. They rely on these courts. There are 81 of them in St. Louis County. They rely on part-time prosecutors and part-time judges. It's very difficult to comply with the Constitution when a court is part-time. I think abolition may actually be the simplest and the best solution. It's a solution that many places historically have gone with.
Alec, you're sitting there watching this around the country from New York, but people scratched their heads when Ferguson went so wild. I mean, yes, it's bad enough if you accepted the version of hands up and still shot. We've seen that's become a much more complicated story over the months. But when you look underneath and try and understand the sources of frustration, anger, tension there, it is not hard to look at this issue and see how people could feel systematically oppressed sort of along Tea Party lines way back in the Revolutionary era.
That's correct. And I have to tell you that one of the most heartbreaking things that I've experienced over the past year or so that I've been really investigating this in depth is I've done hundreds of interviews with people all around different places and trying to get at the core of this problem. And when you sit there with someone and you hear about the despair that they feel when they just do not see a way out. They're being told by police, they're being told by the courts that unless you pay us, we will jail you. And in the St. Louis area, you could be having seven or eight different municipalities telling you that at once. And who do you pay first? I mean, they're all going to jail you. And this notion that they can't get their license back so they can get a job, so that they can get the money to pay it back, is this sort of never-ending cycle. And it's why I think we've seen in the St. Louis, in these municipalities, just in the past 5 months, we've seen four suicides or attempted suicides in these municipal jails by people who could not afford to buy their way out. In the city that we sued, Jennings, a very small town about half the size of Ferguson, we've seen two suicides in the past 2 years by people who were held there solely because they couldn't afford to pay a few hundred dollars to get out. And this is the kind of thing we're seeing around the country. The other point, I think, which is suggested by your question, is that these arrest warrants, like Brendan mentioned, there are 400,000 in the county. Ferguson averages 3.6 arrest warrants per household. When you have that many arrest warrants, what you do is you create a lot of police-citizen interactions that would otherwise be unnecessary. So you're encouraging the police to check everyone's ID, to stop people, to ask them questions, to arrest them for something very minor or for owing a debt. And that leads to many more potential situations where excessive force could be used, or there could be a misunderstanding, or police could think that someone had a weapon, and all of a sudden things have escalated. And so one of the things that I think you're seeing in Ferguson is this people are tired of being constantly stopped and forced to explain themselves to police, and the accumulation of those little daily indignities of having to show your ID every time you leave the house is something that we've seen a lot of in Ferguson, and I think that's one of the sources of the unrest there, and it's certainly a problem in other places as well.
It is very revealing to look under the covers here. Municipal courts in the St. Louis area, but an issue right across the country. Alec Kerkatsanis with Equal Justice Under Law, please stand by in New York. Brendan Roediger at St. Louis University. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American justice and the what you might call the debtor's prison problem through the example of municipal courts around St. Louis, the turf where Michael Brown was shot and died 6 months ago this week. You want to know one reason for the anger, the frustration there? This might be a place to look. This isn't just around St. Louis by any means. Here's Timothy Fugat. He was pulled over in Childersburg, Alabama, 2010, for having an expired license plate. He and his wife, who also had multiple traffic violations, ordered to pay all court costs. When they failed to pay, they were arrested and jailed. Here he is talking to PBS NewsHour in December. Said he felt treated unfairly.
I felt completely like a criminal. I mean, I didn't sell drugs. I didn't break into anyone's home. I didn't kill anybody. I had an expired tag.
And he and his wife went to jail. We're going to go to Ferguson, Missouri in just a moment, and to a judge who is looking at reform from the inside of the municipal court system around St. Louis. A couple of calls first. Sean in New Orleans. Sean, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, this is a really, really important issue. I practice social work in the greater New Orleans area. Mm-hmm. And one thing I've also noticed on top of the fear of going to jail, keeping them locked up, is that people actually don't call emergency services when they really need them. I've had victims of domestic violence not call the police when boyfriends show up.
Why not, Sean?
Because they've got attachments.
Oh, you mean they have arrest warrants? They're afraid that they'll end up in jail themselves?
Yeah, down here we call them attachments.
Okay.
Yeah, they don't know. I mean, you know, I've tried to work with local law enforcement, ask them, like, hey, would somebody get arrested for something like that? And you can never get a clear answer. But from my client's point of view, it's just too much of a risk.
So what if I say, why don't you just pay the tickets instead of, you know, carrying that threat of jail over your head?
The payments balloon so fast, they add them on, the court costs, and then you're living off of benefits. You're trying to run a household. And then they go, like, I've had a client, she went to jail for about 3 weeks off an attachment. And while she was in jail, she was evicted from her apartment, or she had to split her kids up. It's just the amount of stress, extra stress, it puts on people is just unreal.
And these are people who are not in comfortable circumstances to begin with. Sean, I appreciate your call from New Orleans. Let's get one from Madison, Wisconsin. Pat, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I had 2 points. One is, from my experience, I think these traffic tickets or parking tickets, these ordinance violations, they create this big problem for people, and they can't get out from underneath it. And it just gets worse because they ignore it, and then they end up with suspended registration or suspended driver's license, and it just keeps going. On the other hand, though, I've seen a situation in Wisconsin where which I was a witness to,
okay.
This guy who was driving 80 miles an hour on a busy street, and he crashes into somebody, and it causes some really serious injuries to another individual.
Yeah.
And I looked at his driving record, and he has 26 arrests, most of them which he has ignored. He never was in prison. He never went to jail, it appears. He just ignores it and just keeps driving. And he goes to court, and he doesn't have the money, or doesn't go to court. He just doesn't show up, and he ignores it. So there is, by ignoring this type of stuff, people are not going to be law-abiding. And I think that is another part of the problem.
Yep, yep.
What are you going to do to people to make them obey the law if you have no teeth in the law to say this is what you have to do?
Right. No teeth. Where does public order go? Pat, you raise both sides of it, and I'm glad you do. Brendan Roediger at St. Louis University, what about it? I mean, you can't just have Wild West, anything goes on the streets. Yes, people have trouble paying, but if you take away those teeth, if you clear out those jails and take away the fines, what's to keep order in the community, Brendan?
Yeah, so first of all, I'll say we do have in Missouri a state judicial system that's well-equipped to deal with these issues. If there's somebody who repeatedly drives poorly, they should be charged with a state offense. And that should, you know, that should be handled in that way.
You mean you don't need the municipal courts to do it?
Absolutely not. The reason these cases are brought almost exclusively as ordinance cases in local courts is because then the municipalities get to keep the money. So I would absolutely agree with the caller about that. I would also return to the prior caller and say that this issue of being afraid to call the police is a very, very serious issue. I have hundreds of clients that would literally not call the police under any circumstances. Victims of domestic violence, people who have been robbed, whose homes have been burglarized. But the fear that there may be a warrant out there from 1999 in Pine Lawn keeps them from calling the police.
Frank Vatera joins us right now from Maryland Heights, Missouri. He is an attorney, municipal court official, and judge. He's chairman of the Municipal Court Improvement Committee in St. Louis County. This is an effort to reform these municipal courts from within. Frank Vatera, Judge Vatera, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Do you need reform?
Oh, yes. We definitely do. And we needed it before Michael Brown was shot. If there's any good thing that came out of the Ferguson tragedy, it is that we finally have these 80 courts paying attention to each other and paying attention to some of the basic rights that have been described here that have been thwarted by some of the courts, not all of them, but some of them.
What do you say to skeptics who don't believe that it can be reformed from within? You've got critics, I'm reading in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the newspaper here, calling, I guess, you and others, in a way, a cabal of lawyers and judges who benefit from the existing system. Judge Vatera.
Oh, I know. They call us the Skulk, which is a group of foxes who are guarding the hen house. And that isn't really true, because about 70% of the courts operate very efficiently. And but we have some that don't do it right. And the things that have been described are piling up. But a lot of the problem is the blame is everywhere. I mean, part of it is just the statutes themselves. I mean, when I first became a judge in 1980, there was 6 ways to lose your license. Now there's 20. Not paying your child support and getting a ticket in another state and all that stuff and not showing up. So there's a lot of people that become behind the eight ball by not having licenses. And then it costs money to keep your car going, and so they get stopped for expired plates and so forth, and that's where it starts. And there is a problem, and what was said before by Brendan about people being afraid to come to court is clear. There are some people that are afraid to come, and we have done a poor job in communicating what the truth is. And the truth is, in most courts, that if you show up, even if you don't have any money, you're not going to get arrested. I mean, we know the Constitution. But we have to tell the people that. So one of the things we're doing in our improvement committee is a simple notice that we're going to have every police officer give anybody who gets a ticket or summons for other things, saying, look, please come to court. If you don't come to court, you may be have an arrest warrant. If you show up without any money, you will not be arrested. It seems unbelievably simple, Tom, but that's the sort of thing we're doing.
But, of course, people don't, as you point out, they're skeptical about that. They're afraid that they will. If I may, let me put that to Brendan Roediger. Brendan, is that a fair characterization? If you show up, don't worry, you're not going to jail.
It is not a fair characterization everywhere. And so the answer is people have bad experiences in four courts or five courts or six courts, and then they're being told, but there are other courts where if you show up and you don't have the money, we will work with you. And really, people do not believe this, and something is going to have to fundamentally change, not in some courts but in all courts before the community would begin to trust these courts.
Frank Vetterot, Judge Vetterot, let me ask you about this. I'm looking here. There's a group called Better Together. You probably know about it. They've done a survey of all court fines and fees in Missouri, collected in 2013, $132 million. Now, more than $61 million of that collected by the city of St. Louis and from that collar of nearby communities, 46% of the total just from that sort of inner city or inner ring group, despite them being home to only 22% of Missourians. Are these people less law-abiding, or are they having the arm put on them by the law? They're being fined in a much greater proportion than general Missourians.
I don't know the answer to that. We have a lot more cities. We have 35% of the revenue of courts statewide, even though we only represent one out of 114 counties. That's because of the population. But why the revenue is so high, I do not know. It's unfortunate.
Well, isn't it kind of baked into the system? If this revenue supports a third, let's say, of a community's overall expenditures, of its revenue, isn't it going to be hungry for those revenues, for those fines?
Well, there's no doubt that that's the case in some of the smaller cities. But what Brendan never mentions is that about 75% of the cities have a very low amount of their court revenue as a percentage of the city's revenue. And the perception by the defense lawyers is that the sky is falling completely, and we think that we can improve our courts radically by just communicating better. So it isn't, just to abolish all courts and go to the state would be a complete disaster because, cities have rights too. And not all cities are the ones that Brendan talks about. Now, I've been doing this for 35 years and I have a lot of experience, mm-hmm. believe me.
Still, it gets our attention.
Do it right.
It gets our attention that in Ferguson, where all of this came to a head, you have the highest number of arrest warrants in the state relative to its size. 1,500 warrants per 1,000 people. That's unbelievable.
Well, I looked at the lawsuit that Alex filed. And it's very well written, and in fact, it gets you mad reading it. It reads like a Charles Dickens novel in a way about debtors' prisons. And if the things in there are true, it is a horrible, horrible situation in Jennings and Ferguson. I don't know anything about the jail situation, but what's never mentioned in the lawsuit, and I read it four times, is that most of the people that are arrested didn't show up. It's never mentioned. It keeps saying that they're jailed because they don't pay the money. That is absolutely false. And every judge will tell you the same thing. We don't put people in jail for not paying fines. We put people in jail for not showing up.
Alec Karakatsanis in New York, at Equal Justice Under Law, are you just telling half the story in your Dickensian narrative?
Absolutely not. I think certainly everyone would agree that there are many, many people who have reason to fear going to court. And so certainly there are some people who knowingly, I'm sure, around the St. Louis area, who knowingly fail to show up for court because the last time they were in court, they watched people be jailed because of their poverty, just like there are people who are afraid to call the police. But what's actually happening, in my view, from my investigation, is that many people are being told not to come to court.
By whom?
By local officials. They're being told instead to take a payment down to the police department or to take a payment to the court clerk. Then when they don't bring that payment in on any given month, they're given a warrant out. Now, to me, they have not failed to appear at any court date. But they're getting a warrant out solely because they're too poor to pay. Other people are being summoned to court through mail that is sent to a last known address, which they never got notice of. These cities have absolutely failed to institute the kind of mechanisms that could assure that people actually know about their court dates and to assure that people are summoned in a valid way. So I think there's lots of problems throughout the entire system that lead people not to show up in court. For example, another big problem is that a lot of these towns will issue a warrant for someone's arrest for failing to appear in court when they're being held in another city's jail or when they're in the hospital.
They can't show up because they're behind bars or they're ill. We're talking about American justice and the so-called debtor's prison problem. Let me bring in Peter, if I may, calling from Seymour, Connecticut. Peter, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think this really comes down to a lack of accountability. You can't have a fine from a violation if you don't commit a crime. If you don't park in front of a hydrant, if you don't speed while you're driving, you can't get in trouble for it. And then to talk about them like it's some sort of just complete, I don't know exactly the word for it, but tragedy. That they're being, you know, persecuted like this. They did commit a crime. Now, when they go to jail, they shouldn't have a fine afterwards. That should become the ultimate penalty. But you need to pay your fines.
But
and if you pay them initially, they don't mount.
Yeah, I totally get that. But could you see, Peter, a system that effectively turned into kind of a, you know, farming the populace for these things? I mean, you know how easy it would be to set up a lot of speed traps and go after every little thing. I don't know if you're perfect at every moment on the road, but you could get snared up, couldn't you? I could.
I've been snared up more than once, and when I did, I paid the fine. I've gotten a few different traffic violations.
Yeah.
The day I get them, I send out a check. And it's not some point in my life I was not entirely financially stable.
Yeah.
But I still found a way to make it happen, because if you look at the fine, let's say you get a $50 parking ticket. If you don't pay it within 30 days,
right,
generally the parking ticket doubles.
Brendan, Peter, thank you for your call. Brendan Roediger, not right to portray this as a kind of tragedy. Just pay the fines, people.
Yeah, I do. I get speeding tickets regularly, and I pay them. But, you know, poverty is the core of this issue. So if you get pulled over, you have your driver's license, you have your insurance, your car is good, you get pulled over, taking a right turn without signaling, and you get a fine of $100. You can't pay that fine, and you get a warrant, and your license is automatically suspended. Now you get pulled over 2 weeks later, you still owe the $100, you're going to jail, and you have a new charge of driving while suspended, which may, you know, come with a $400 fine. And very quickly, my clients owe $1,500, $2,000. And it's really something that they're never going to crawl out of. And they spend weeks in jail because of this. It's not something that wealthy people experience. In Missouri, most wealthy people hire a lawyer and they never go to court.
Frank Vetter, I've just got you for another minute. Is there a justice problem here? Is there a poverty problem? When you step back and look overall, is the system fair?
Well, the system isn't completely fair, no. And a lot of the things that Brendan and the others have said are true. I mean, but unfortunately, the judge can't, when you don't show up in court, we don't know what color you are. We don't know whether you're rich or poor. And we send courtesy letters out, and when you don't show up, we can't give you an award. We have to issue a warrant, because what people forget is 75 to 80% of the people pay their fines like that man that just called. Just pay them out of court.
Maybe there's a system that we need to back away from.
We're talking about 20%.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it isn't just to the people that are poor. There's no doubt about it. But in St. Louis, I don't know about other parts of the mm-hmm. country, but in St. Louis, we do not have a great public transportation system, Tom. And people that are the working poor that have cars drive them. Unfortunately, they can't get them licensed properly, or their old license has been suspended. That is a systemic problem. And judges have to do a better job at understanding people that are struggling with money.
We're trying to unravel that a little bit in this hour. See a way forward. Frank Vetterott, attorney, municipal court official, and judge, joining us from Maryland Heights, Missouri there. Brendan Roediger at St. Louis, Missouri. Alec Karakatsanis at Equal Justice Under Law. Please stand by. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And we are talking this hour about American justice and the so-called debtor's prison problem through the example of municipal courts around St. Louis, the turf where Michael Brown was shot and died 6 months ago this week. You want to know one reason for the anger and frustration we saw there in the weeks that followed? One reason? Maybe look here. We're going to go to Ferguson in just a minute here. Lots of response from listeners. Your co says, oh, so, okay, so what? Everyone should feel free to drive with expired tags, licenses, to hear the poor aggrieved citizen tell it? Not sympathetic there. But others said, Tom says, you have to understand why these St. Louis municipalities are so harsh toward poor people. Both residents and revenue are leaving St. Louis City and St. Louis County due to white flight to the exurban St. Charles County. Take a look at the map. In the first reference, there's a profit found in poverty because it provides income, even if it hurts the poorest of the poor, says Tom. Andrea says it looks like debtor's prison because it is debtor's prison. Just another way to keep the poor poor and powerless. And here says, I'd be okay with everyone being offered community service, I guess, instead of paying fines or jail time, especially if it could be done to replace an overpaid public employee union member. Another issue entirely there. And Art City writes in, he agrees with our caller Sean in New Orleans, says our clients won't even go to hospital because of the fear of driving while black and poor. Just a sampling of lots of response there online. Brendan, Alec, please stand by. Patricia Bynes joins us right now from Ferguson, Missouri, a Democratic committeewoman for Ferguson Township there. Patricia Bynes, welcome back to On Point. Thank you very much for joining us. Is this a big problem?
Hi, Tom. Yes, this is a major problem, and it's causing a lot of strife in the streets, and it is driving a lot of the interaction between the public and law enforcement. I do not believe that men and women go into the field of policing to become the arm of the municipalities in order to drive revenue, but that's what's happening, especially in St. Louis County, with the St. Louis municipal police forces and municipal court system.
Are these fines and fees and jail time to keep public order, in your view, Patricia Bynes, or to float the community budgets?
You know, I've been hearing some very interesting things from a caller that was on and from Judge Vaderot, and here are a few things that I picked up. One of your callers mentioned if you didn't commit a crime, you wouldn't be in this situation. So we are criminalizing unexpired plates. We are criminalizing just very basic violations and ordinances. And you heard the judge say that there were, when he first started about 35 years ago, there were 6 ways to get your license taken away.
Yeah.
Now it's multiple times. And the judge also mentioned that many of the courts are run efficiently. Now, I'm not sure what exactly that means from his perspective, but from where I'm sitting, they are running efficiently because they seem to be fantastic revenue drivers when people who are on municipal city councils are passing ordinances that seem to increase the budget.
Judge Vaderot says, message to offenders, just show up at court. Don't worry about going to jail. It's not going to happen. Just show up when you're called.
Well, that's the other communication issue. You have citizens who will tell you that police officers who harass them are looking forward to them showing up, and when they show up, we'll find a way to lock them up or continue to put tickets on them regardless or if they are there. There also are payment plans that are done in the municipal court systems, but some of them will let you know, hey, you have to pay at least $50 a week or $50 a month, whatever their standards are, and if you do not meet that, they will reissue the warrant for your arrest. So it's not quite as simple as, hey, just show up, because if I still do not have the money to pay you, then what?
How much of what we saw on the streets of Ferguson, we know there was a lot going on there, but is this part of what set the table for all of that explosion of frustration last year?
This is exactly what set the table. It wasn't just an officer with a gun and a bullet that killed Michael Brown. What many people in the community saw was a systematic institution that has been taking young black men and women poor down for decades. And unfortunately, St. Louis County seems to be a region that's almost on steroids with the municipal system. We have 90 municipalities. We have 81 municipal courts. Is this really necessary? Because if you have a population of 500, does that really constitute being able to be your own city And if not, how are you going to derive that revenue? They look to the municipal courts to help them with that.
Do you think this just grew up willy-nilly over the years? It just kind of emerged, you know, while people weren't paying attention? Or is there something deliberate about it? It can almost look like a kind of crowd control, population control.
I think that this was very, I'm not quite sure exactly how this came about, but we live in a system right now where many people who you would go to help fix this problem, attorneys for lawsuits, they benefit greatly from what is going on. Many people who are municipal prosecutors on Monday are also municipal judges on Tuesday, and then they also serve their own law firms on Wednesday. So there is a cycle and a driver, not just for the municipal the municipal courts and the municipalities, but also for the attorneys who are involved. So this is why there are many people who, while I certainly understand where Judge Vaderot is coming from, it almost seems disingenuous, because to correct this problem would actually make a difference in many of these attorneys' lifestyles, because we would be taking out some of the roles that they play and some of the income that they get from this system.
Brendan Roediger at St. Louis University, how do you see the resistance to rectifying this, to whatever setting this straight would mean, to getting that done?
Well, I would like to say I agree with Patricia entirely that there are many, many attorneys that are very invested in this system, that cannot see past this system. I don't know precisely historically how we got to this point. I mean, many of these municipalities were white communities that used police specifically to keep black residents out. That has changed. The policing hasn't changed, but the populations have changed. And it's taken place slowly over time, and somehow we woke up one day and this is what it looks like.
I mean, it must be worse when the economy gets bad, because then people have a tougher time finding jobs, and so when there's a problem, tougher time setting it right.
Well, certainly, and as malls and businesses left North County, we saw an increase in municipal fine revenue. It became a way to replace sales tax and property tax. One of the things that we've been asking for is, you know, when there are these spaces like a municipal court improvement committee, it's really important that the residents who are actually impacted by this system get to be at that table and talk. And I think that anything that's decided by a bunch of judges and lawyers sitting around a table, there's just not going to be trust in the community.
But you've got high-level attention here. You had Governor Nixon, Jay Nixon of Missouri, in his State of the State address last month saying municipal court reform is needed, quoting him here, so that all citizens are treated fairly. That seems to be sort of from the top of your state government, Brendan.
Absolutely. I mean, the movement is definitely towards reform, and hopefully it goes farther than just working around the edges and we end up actually getting at some sort of real transformation.
Rochelle in New York, Plattsburgh, New York. Thank you for calling, Rochelle. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
So I had a couple of points to make today, and one is kind of related to what the last woman you spoke to just said, which is that here in Plattsburgh, there's no system to contact the debtor about the fines and try to work out some kind of a payment plan, but you should be able to work with them continuously regarding that. And also that, my mom spent some time in our local jail up here, and she has some pretty significant medical problems. And during her time while incarcerated, she asked repeatedly for medical attention and never received it and wound up in the hospital and almost died.
And do you see this being related to what, Rochelle? Is it to poverty, or she just had a personal problem and the jail was not responsive? What?
She had, you know, some minor nonviolent issues going on related to an abusive relationship. She wound up in jail and did not get the medical attention she needed because she was ignored by the jail staff, including the jail's medical staff. And when she finally got to the hospital, the doctor told her that she could have died.
You get in there, and it's not easy at all. Rochelle, I appreciate your call. One more right here, Columbus, Georgia. Jeremy's calling. You're on, Jeremy.
Yes, hello, Tom. Thank you for the call.
Yeah.
I just am calling. I had sort of some of the earlier callers, I feel, in my opinion, are having an elitist attitude because we get to a certain point in our life where we feel as though we're, you know, at the top to where we can get out of things. We have the money and the ability to get out of these things. And at one point in time, I was in that way before. I was blown up in Iraq, and I have a traumatic brain injury and a spinal cord injury and PTSD.
Okay.
I black out time to time, and I'm not supposed to drive. But sometimes my wife leaves the keys out, and during a blackout, I grab the keys, and I'm lucid during these blackouts.
Okay.
I can't remember anything after the fact. So I was driving in Atlanta, and I was pulled over, and I was way out of 68 miles from my house.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I explained to the officer what happened, and he said, "Well, sorry for you. I'm gonna tow your truck." And I sat there on the curb with $120 in my pocket, trying to flag down a cab. I finally got somebody to agree to drive me the 140 mile round trip to get back home. I actually had blacked out. I forgot about these fines, and then when I did find out about my fines within a year later, my ticket rose to $7,400 ticket.
Jeremy, did you end up in jail? And if you did, what did you see there?
That's what I was trying to explain. I'm sorry, Tom.
That's okay.
I point out very quickly with this my brain injury, but I ended up having another blackout where my wife had inadvertently left the keys out again. And I know this is on me, and it's my responsibility, and I take full responsibility. I ended up in jail for 7 days, and the bench warrant was a solid warrant. It's $2,350, no percentage. And nobody I know has that kind of money.
So what's the conclusion you took away from this, Jeremy?
I talked 93% of my pod were young black men, 18 to 25. Most of them were in there on traffic warrants. Most of them didn't have the money in their family to even get them out, and they're just sitting in jail on traffic warrants. And there's got to be a better system. I mean, community service would serve the public better than having men sit in jail cells and toil over a matter of $100 and some.
Jeremy, you make it perfectly real for us, and I really appreciate your call from Columbus, Georgia. Patricia Bynes, is that a story that people in your community might relate to?
Absolutely. We know it all too well. And so many people, because this does not just affect the person who's actually in jail. It affects their family, their children. It affects their coworkers. Should they be employed and they are unable to come to work, many people get fired behind having to sit in jail. You lose your job. If you aren't making the rent, then you lose your home. It is a nasty, vicious cycle that affects more than just the individual sitting in the jail. It actually affects the entire community.
Alec Kirkitsonis, how do we keep public order but also reform here? You want some order on the streets, but you also don't want a system that ends up leaving a lot of people really under what can feel like an oppressive order. How do we do it?
Well, I don't think that I think Brendan sort of answered this question earlier, and I think that the real problem here is over-policing. Everybody commits, you know, everyone jaywalks or goes 4 miles over the speed limit or occasionally forgets to stop completely at a stop sign or, you know, fails to make a proper turn to the turn signal. Those things shouldn't be the type of thing that police are excited to do. Police should be trying to keep people safe, not generate revenue and just issue ticket after ticket after ticket. And as Brendan said, if there's someone who's out there recklessly driving, that can be a criminal offense. If there are people that are out there actually doing dangerous things, those people can be handled in a different way. But, you know, what's happening here is that people are not being given jail sentences for any of these. These are not dangerous offenses that people are committing by and large. These are things they're being given fines for. And those fines are being converted illegally into jail sentences solely because they can't pay. So I think one thing that we can do is just stop this over-policing. There's way too much of it out there. In Washington, D.C., where I live, 96% of all arrests are for things the FBI calls nonviolent. We need to take a closer look at what exactly our police are doing. What are the things that people are being arrested and jailed for? And should we be arresting and caging people for doing those things?
Debtor's prison was outlawed 200 years ago in this country. Have we come back to it in a way?
I think one thing that Judge Vaderot neglected to mention, which is I think something that our lawsuit brings forward, is that these things are happening because none of these people are being provided lawyers. When they go to these municipal courts, they have no idea what's going on, even when they show up, and they're being told things by a prosecutor and a judge, and they don't understand, they can't navigate it, and that's why we see the rise of modern debtors' prisons. If these systems were forced to actually provide the rights that we all hold dear, like an attorney, like due process, they wouldn't be able to do these things so, quote, efficiently, end quote.
Alec, we're up against the clock right there. Alec Herkatsanis with Equal Justice Under Law in New York. Thank you for joining us, Brendan Roediger at St. Louis University. Our thanks to you, and Patricia Bynes, Democratic Committeewoman in Ferguson Township. Thanks to you all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.